We are looking back on President Biden's first year in office, this time regarding foreign policy. The administration did take tremendous heat for that hasty withdrawal from Afghanistan in August. It stranded many Afghans who helped the U.S. over the decades. It led to the deaths of 13 U.S. service members in that Kabul bomb attack in the final days of America's time there. Here was President Biden back on August 20th.
We went to Afghanistan for the express purpose of getting rid of al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, as well as getting Osama bin Laden. And we did.
We speak more about this with Jonathan Shanzer of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He does say Afghanistan was the administration's biggest blunder.
It was an unforced error beyond anything that I could have imagined. Of course, this was a withdrawal that was many years in the making. I think that we can put some of the blame at the feet of former President Barack Obama and certainly former President Trump. All of the steps that were taken leading up to that moment certainly had been prepared by previous commanders in chief. However, it was Biden that ultimately made the decision, and the execution of that withdrawal was really shocking. There was, of course, the mistake of just leaving Afghanistan, but the way in which it was done, pulling out the military assets before pulling out political personnel, left those political types stranded and in great peril, and it really reflected poorly on the power of the United States government. The decision to leave entirely, I think, ultimately left the people of Afghanistan to the dogs.
As we read in the Bob Woodward, Robert Costa book, Peril, this year, President Biden did not expect to see on television and in the newspapers so much critical commentary. And the authors even say he lightly tapped on the Resolute desk in the Oval Office and said, the buck really does stop here. Do you find it strange that he wouldn't think the traditional media, social media, all the rest would jump all over him for this disorganized, rushed, and ultimately deadly withdrawal?
Well, I think that president was following the lead of previous presidents, and I think we could make an argument that there was a center of gravity here in the United States that was calling for withdrawal, and that the president truly thought he was fulfilling his mandate. The problem was the way in which it was done, but also the president has ignored the importance of the influence of the United States around the world, that U.S.-led world order that has been in place for the better part of almost 80 years. You cannot replace the influence of the United States, that if the goal is to ensure a somewhat liberal world order and to ensure a modicum of peace or stability around the world, that the United States needs to be engaged. The decision to turn his back on that world order and to conduct that withdrawal in the disorganized fashion that he did, I think, ultimately led to the failure that we see today.
What would you say is a foreign policy triumph for this White House, even if maybe it wasn't widely advertised?
Well, one thing that I did talk about in my recent book called Gaza Conflict 2021, I do believe that the Biden administration provided all the support that Israel needed in order to tangle with Hamas, which, of course, is an Iran-backed terrorist proxy. The only problem with what I saw during those 11 days of war was that on the ninth day after the ceasefire was announced, at least informally in the Middle East, that's when we began to see the Biden administration really hammering the Israelis, I think for no other reason than to score political points with the so-called squad, with the progressive left of the Democratic Party. That undermined a lot of the good things that the Biden administration did during those 11 days of war. But overall, those 9 out of 11 days, the administration conducted itself rather well.
There was also, Jonathan, the handling of a new nuclear submarine deal with Australia when France had an existing deal with that nation for some conventional subs. I don't think you have to be a superpower to know that some good diplomacy goes a long way. Again, the administration is filled with veteran policymakers and diplomats. Why do you believe that was handled so badly?
I think some of it had to do with operational security, but I would agree that it was really botched execution, especially from a president who vowed to restore transatlantic ties in the aftermath of the Trump administration. Of course, the Trump administration was marked by tensions between the United States and some of our European allies. And Biden really declared that the tension would be over once he stepped into office. In fact, what we saw was an escalation of those tensions. France appeared to really feel as if the United States had stabbed the French in the back over this deal. Of course, that doesn't bode well, given that the French have emerged really the leaders of the European Union, as Germany has lost a bit of its sway in Brussels.
From China and Taiwan to Russia and Ukraine, we seem to have people preparing for war, or I guess you could say posturing in such a way. Has President Biden set the table to maybe settle some of these matters next year, or are they being allowed to fester?
In my view, they appear to be festering. You know, certainly I think the president has tried to dissuade Vladimir Putin his intent to invade Ukraine and has potentially worked to undercut the military buildup that we're seeing on the part of the Russian army. But I don't get a sense that Putin has quit those plans. I think they're still very much in place, and it is a serious cause for concern. Similarly, with the Chinese, there have been efforts to reduce tension, but the Chinese still have their eyes on Taiwan. And I would say that military action in both theaters is certainly possible in 2022. And it really is cause for concern. I mean, you know, the idea that somehow diplomacy, not backed by a credible threat of military force, not with the United States baring its teeth at its potential enemies, one just gets a sense that these two revisionist actors look at the United States and don't see the threat.
How would you pursue that in the new year? How does one demonstrate that toughness?
A decision on the part of the United States to join hands with some of its transatlantic allies, threatening Russia of severe consequences and very credible consequences at that. And this is not to say that the United States needs to prepare for another long war. That's not what I think the United States should be doing. But there should be a threat of consequences if and when China or Russia decide to make one of these fateful moves. I think right now, neither country truly believes that the United States has the will to counter their malign activity. And I think that explains the buildup and the tension that we're seeing right now.
Is there a final thought you'd leave us with as we get ready to celebrate this new year?
Ultimately, the COVID crisis has a significant amount of influence on foreign policy making. Economically, it remains a challenge. In terms of just access to some of the more troubled spots around the region, there still is significant concern as a result of the pandemic. So I think should we see an end to the pandemic, or at least a tapering off of the pandemic, it may be easier to get back to business as usual and to try to promote some stability worldwide.
Jonathan Schanzer, he's with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and he was with us on Skype.